Welcome to It Takes Imagination, where we explore creativity and big ideas in content marketing. We get help on each episode from two staples of our headquarters in Chicago, microbrews for our interview guests and us, and laughs from an improv alum of Second City. We cover the topics that matter most to content marketers, in your ears and on the go. I'm your host, Chris Blose, VP of Content and Imagination. And today we're taking a tasty sip of a heady topic, beer and content marketing. We'll get insight from Michael Kaiser, the founder and creative director of Good Beer Hunting. Good Beer Hunting is a media crew devoted to covering the beer industry with a depth that few others have. We'll explore how storytelling for craft beer differs from mainstream beer advertising, and we'll take a look at exactly what the beer geek audience wants to know. And here's the good news. Even if you don't work in the world of beer, the lessons that you can learn from the rise of craft beer storytelling are still worth hearing. What do you think about when you hear beer and marketing? Is it Super Bowl commercials, talking dogs and frogs, and catchphrases that somehow find their way onto t-shirts and into your social feeds? If so, that's fair. The big budget, big beer ad has long been a staple of the industry. But the emergence of the craft brew industry hasn't just brought about a change in the variety of flavors in your glass, mug, bottle, or can. It has also brought new forms of storytelling that are much more in line with what we think of in the world of content marketing than they are with traditional advertising. And the reason for that is clear. It's the audience. Fans of craft beer, they crave more than just mascots and zingers. They want to know about the brewing process. They want to know the behind-the-scenes stories of how brewers built their businesses. They want the latest details about that special release that's coming out soon. And they want the intricate details of experiments and flavor. They want to know things like IBUs and ABV. And for the uninitiated, and I must confess that I had to look this up myself when I started researching, that means International Bitterness Units and Alcohol by Volume. Those acronyms may sound foreign to you, but the audience-centric nature of the storytelling should not. Any company, any nonprofit, any association that markets to a specific set of interests should take note and heed this lesson. Authenticity reigns supreme. The beer brands that know their own story and tell it really well are the most likely to connect with audiences and ultimately find buyers for their beer. So just how big are those audiences? For the answer, let's get some numbers from our podcast crew and fellow Imagination editors, Alma Bauman and Margaret Poe.
Hey, Alma. So I know both of us have been doing some research into the beer industry. Hard day at work. So let's talk about what we found. So if you're not a beer drinker, I know you are, but if you're not, you may not know that the beer market's pretty big. The Brewers Association estimates that the craft beer market was worth $23.5 billion as of 2016.
Wow, that is big. And that really makes sense because the Brewers Association also says that the majority of Americans live within 10 miles of a craft brewer. We have a lot of great ones in Chicago, and at times it can feel like they're on every corner.
That's for sure. What I find interesting about the market is that it's made up of more than 5,000 small to medium breweries, and none of them are backed by Anheuser-Busch levels of money.
I really like that, and you bring up a great point. While the craft brewery market seems to cover a lot, it's still pretty small compared to the big guys. Even though 98% of today's U.S. breweries remain independent, craft brews have only 13% of the market share by volume.
You know, I think that backs up this idea we've been talking about this episode. Independent businesses, like craft brewers, need to tell their unique stories, not only to their specific audience, but also to others who may be interested in a smart and pointed way.
I'll drink to that.
Me too. Cheers.
Cheers.
Our guest today started Good Beer Hunting as a passion project and turned it into a full-blown editorial operation. Michael Kaiser and his team of around 25 writers, designers, photographers, videographers, and more cover the beer industry with the passion of fans and the professionalism of journalists, because they're both. Michael, welcome. Let's crack one open and get this conversation started. You know, we always do these interviews over a beer, but that seems especially appropriate this time, given your background and the work that you do. What got you into the world of beer in the first place?
The beer itself. It was a Saison DuPont. that I had at the Map Room in Chicago going back, boy, over 10 years ago now. I'd always drank beer like anybody does in college and started out with a Yingling lager and some local stuff. But when I moved to Chicago, I was exposed to a ton of fantastic beers just because of places like the Map Room and Hop Leaf. But it wasn't really until I had my first Saison DuPont that I just had this kind of like aha through the flavor experience of that beer and didn't understand why I loved it so much, but I was certainly gung-ho about figuring it out.
Well, and so from there, how did good beer hunting come about?
I literally bought the URL the next day. I went out to a store, West Lakeview Liquors in Chicago, which is a little specialty beer shop known for carrying a lot of European beers and things like that. And I bought everything I could find on the shelf with the word Saison on it, which wasn't that many at the time, but there was, you know, maybe a half a dozen. Because I was convinced that whatever the Saison thing was the future of my beer experience. And I bought the URL the next day so that I could jot down some notes about what I was tasting and share it with my friend Doug.
Well, and over time, obviously, this grew into something more professional. As that happened, you know, what sort of gap were you spotting in the market in terms of beer coverage?
Yeah, well, the gap was massive. There was, you know, plenty of people out there blogging on a very personal level the way that I started out, but nobody was really producing digital content with high production value. And as my interests in both the business and the products of beer kind of continued to grow, the stories became more complex and interesting, and personalities started showing up and characters, and it just started to look and feel vastly different than anything else that was out there. It didn't occur to me until I started to become known and kind of, you know, highly respected in the beer world very quickly, that production value and that kind of effort that I was making was so unique.
Well, and I think that may apply to the beer industry as a whole when you start looking at the craft beer movement too. You know, it seems to me that that's a movement that's grown tremendously, but maybe there's still a lot of room to grow in terms of the way that it's marketed, the way that you communicate about that. How do you think about the craft beer enthusiast maybe differently than you think about the average beer drinker?
Yeah, I mean, enthusiasm is at the root of that word. And so these are people that are thinking about beer, seeking it out, analyzing it, and sort of asking themselves questions. And, you know, they're kind of digging into the meaning of a lot of these things. And with something like craft beer, you know, what is craft beer has always been the biggest question. For those folks, I think it's been a longstanding debate about what is and isn't craft, whether it's the way you make something, whether it's the way it tastes, who owns that brewery, whether it's a corporation or a small family, kind of small business situation, or anything in between. Those have always been the things that have kind of been part and parcel of what that beer is for a lot of folks. And so it's kind of a holistic concept. And because it's holistic and very complex, everybody kind of has their own point of view on that, which leads to a lot of discourse. I guess you can't really separate what that definition is from the product itself for a lot of folks.
True. And I'm curious, you know, what are those fans looking for?
Oh, there's certainly not one thing anymore. I think that's been what's kind of interesting about where craft beer has gone, because as the business of craft beer has evolved from sort of what seemed like maybe a cottage industry into a significant market share, I think it's above 12% now, more than 15% if you're talking about dollars. There's a lot of different ideas of what craft beer is or could be now than there maybe was when it first began. You know, you go back 30 years and somebody was just trying to communicate the idea, like Ken Grossman of Sierra Nevada, that you could make your own beer and sell it. You know, so it started at such a basic level. You know, in my generation, I would call myself maybe a second or a third wave craft beer drinker because of just my age. I'm turning 40 this year, and that kind of puts me, you know, in the early 2000s of when this became really interesting to me personally as a drinker. By then, you know, the idea of craft beer had already been established to some degree, and now we were kind of moving into this era of independence. You know, people were looking at ownership and things like that. But ultimately, it comes down to everybody kind of, depending on their age or how they got into it or what their, you know, personal kind of lifestyle and priorities are, they all have their own sort of hierarchy of needs when it comes to craft beer. Some care about ownership first and foremost. Others, like me, I think, are more interested in the product development, you know, how that beer was made, why it was made, what kind of role it's trying to play in the world of beer. Is it pushing the boundaries on a progressive style or doing something unique with the technique? Those are the kinds of things that fascinate me personally. That's my entry point. It's like, what's going on with this beer that's interesting? Ownership matters to me, but, you know, far less, I think, than it does to some folks who maybe have a bit more of a zealous sort of attachment to the idea of taking down the big guys. And that seems to be kind of a preoccupying thought for some folks still. I think, that was kind of the genesis of the current wave of craft beer in the 90s is, you know, take down yellow fizzy macro beer. That still, I think, influences a lot of people's thinking, although I think that group is smaller and smaller. As craft beer kind of hits the mainstream, people, I think, are just more genuinely excited about the product itself and what that gives them from like a flavor or texture experience.
That's interesting, you know, the whole idea of the kind of outsider movement and taking down the big guy. You know, how much, and this may be shifting as you point out, but how much appeal is there in that behind the scenes story? You know, if you've got a craft brewer who started, you know, making beer in their garage, for instance, how much does that tend to appeal to people?
I think it did for a long time until that became a story that started every craft brewery. I mean, how many times have you heard that story now? I mean, we even heard the same thing in tech. You know, if you compare startup stories and in the tech world, they get kind of boring after you've heard about the, you know, the 100th company that started in somebody's garage. And that's not to say that it's not entirely inspiring to those people and the fans that they have. But in terms of a story that you can tell to the world that makes you unique or interesting or different, it just doesn't play that well anymore.
I think that ties into something you and I spoke about before, which, you know, you seem to have a very distinct opinion about brand strategy versus the sort of individual components like social strategy, content strategy, et cetera. So can you tell me a little bit about how you feel about defining a brand up front and why you have to have that as a basis for everything else?
Yeah, so the work that we, you know, that I was doing as a personally writing about craft beer eventually kind of transitioned into working with these breweries as startup clients, you know, using my background in brand and strategy to help them figure out how to articulate who they were, what was going to make them different, how they were going to fit into a market and stand out, and ultimately how they were going to, you know, build that brand and market themselves and tell their story. And so I've now, you know, over the past 5 years, had a pretty good run at, you know, a few dozen different brewery startups in that vein, and kind of figure it out, like what works and what doesn't work. And a lot of the questions I would start to hear from these startups is like, well, what's our social media strategy going to be? Which immediately felt a little discordant with me in terms of how I think about strategy. I think about brand strategy as this kind of this well from which everything springs. You know, it's like it's this core value set. It's this core message. It's this core differentiator or a few differentiators that you have to find a way to bring to life in a variety of ways, including social media. But so many folks, I think, start at that tool level when they have social media and they think they're supposed to use it in a certain way, and they want to know what the strategy for that is. And what they're really talking about there is optimization. And optimization, I think, is more closely associated with a tool or a technique, not your brand strategy.
And who would you point to that is doing that brand story really well, where you can look at, you know, a piece of content or the way their packaging looks or even taste the beer and you know what they're all about?
Yeah, I think Allagash is really at the pinnacle right now of especially a larger brewery. And they're trying to tell a story now that I think aligns so many of their values and their sense of place being up in Maine. They're in Portland, Maine. And so much of what they're sharing on social media, even when they're talking about the beer, is about where some of those ingredients came from. So when they launch a new beer, they're not just showing you the package and saying, go buy this. They're showing you where those ingredients came from, sometimes the actual farm that they came from, or they're showing you how they process that fruit when they get it in. I think that does a great job of explaining to somebody, you know, half a continent away who Allagash is and what they're all about. Similarly, we have a client under Good Beer Hunting that's based in Raleigh, North Carolina, that's a brewery, dim sum restaurant, flower shop, and bookstore all in one.
Oh, wow.
It's a really phenomenal, beautiful space that I think appeals to a much wider audience than we're used to thinking about with beer geeks. And as part of the, you know, the strategy there for how to bring that to life in social media is just showing the activity of the people in this space, the beautiful white light, the decor of it, the flowers, the activity of, you know, reading books and drinking beer in this kind of like cool cafe library space.
Well, and is the story for someone like that a little bit more about the space and less about even the beer types?
To some degree, that's very accurate, yeah. But when we do share a beer story, we're very careful to show the fooder seller that they have, which is really defining of the kind of beer maker they are.
So those are a couple of examples of people who are doing it really well. And you don't have to name names, but on the flip side, what are some common mistakes that you see?
I see a lot of people just shoveling content out the door because they think they're supposed to have it. And so, you know, everybody follows a Twitter account where they're also linking through to their Instagram, but the pictures don't show up in Twitter because they're just, you know, cross-posting it automatically and it all just looks like a bunch of robots. And then when you finally do go to the Instagram page, it's just full of a bunch of like event graphics and a bunch of words on color fields, and it all just looks really noisy and really sort of spammy. They're not really taking the time to create a connection between what they're making and the drinker they're ultimately trying to attract. They're really just trying to bombard you with information because it feels like they just know they need to get it out there and get awareness and let people know what's going on. And so they're not really thinking about their different channels for different purposes. You know, I tend to think of Instagram as this really wonderful place where you can create a tangible experience for people, you know, something very visual and beautiful or at least interesting. Whereas Facebook is much better, I think, at pushing informative kind of content. And then Twitter, of course, is a place where you can have a real voice and engage with people in a timely way. But so often people just kind of look at all those things as one blanket content pipe to shove things through. And I think that ultimately creates really boring, flat, ignorable content.
Well, it also seems to come back to the idea of laying your foundation of strategy first. And I would assume that folks who are just kind of shoveling it out there probably don't have any foundational documents or strategy.
Exactly. If they did, I think it would influence their behavior on those platforms.
So if you had one bit of advice, you know, having spent all this time in the industry, covering the industry, working with different brands, if you had advice for somebody starting up and they're trying to get their word out to the craft beer enthusiast, what would that advice be?
Yeah, if I'm thinking about breweries in particular, I usually try and force them to pick one or two sort of themes or storylines that they think are most unique to them, and then try to brainstorm ways in which you could bring that story to life. So, you know, in the case of somebody like Allagash, where it's so clearly like geography and agriculture is a big priority for them in their story this year, and I see the fruit of that coming to life through the way that they, you know, the things they talk about on Twitter and share, things that they post on Instagram, the photos and the places those photos come from. I see them bringing that particular story to life consistently. And that means that they're going to be building equity in that story. They're not just posting once. It's not just one blog post or not one interview in a magazine. It's something that they're clearly deciding as a talking point for them. And they find different ways to bring it to life every chance they get. Over time, that's going to create real memorability and an impression on people as to who Allagash is and what they're all about. If they try to do everything, if they try and pick every single element of that brewery that they think is interesting to talk about, you're just creating a bunch of noise that really never sorts itself out or synthesizes for people into clear bullet points about who you are. And ultimately, you're much better off with somebody understanding one thing about you very deeply than 100 things in a very shallow way because they don't know how to talk about that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us today, Michael, and cheers. If you've been listening to It Takes Imagination, you know that we don't just love beer. We also love improv comedy. So our next guest is Shad Kunkel, an alum of Chicago's own Second City, who also happens to be an expert on creativity. Lucky for us, Shad also likes his craft beer. Let's start with this, Shad. Are you a beer guy? And if so, what is your taste in beer?
I am a beer guy, and I have been specifically a craft beer guy. Now, my taste in beers, my favorite beer, is Bell's Two-Hearted Ale out of Kalamazoo, Michigan. That is my particular favorite. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't love all the other things, and it doesn't mean when I go to the grocery store I only buy Bell's, but it's the one that started me on this path to, wow, beer can taste different than the stuff that I used to smell in the fraternity room growing up.
When I say beer and marketing, what comes to mind to you, either in terms of mass market beer or craft beer?
Well, it's so interesting because I think the stories are so original with craft beer. You look at mass marketing of like major beer brands, and we're throwing out made up words, made up towns. We have commercials that have nothing to do with the beer just to get your attention. The marketing is almost completely unrelated to what you're consuming. When I think of like craft beer and how it's marketed, it's storytelling and it's regional. There's usually a story why somebody even started making that beer in the particular area, because obviously other beer was available that was promoted by people saying weird words or horses kicking field goals or whatever crazy marketing thing that you normally accompanies the other brands. These brands seem to be more authentic. Like the stories behind them are really unique to you at the time while you're drinking them.
So you're saying it's more than dilly-dilly?
Yes, I'm saying it's more than dilly-dilly. We don't have to make up marketing that's unrelated to the beverage just to keep things fresh. The stories themselves, when it comes to craft beer, keep things fresh.
So, you know, how do you think a beer geek's taste in storytelling is different then? Like, what kind of actual information are they interested in?
Well, I think one of the things that I find interesting, and I think I'm pulling this from Lagunitas, is that their stories usually involve a little bit of risk and a little bit of failure. I'm reminded of a Lagunitas story where they tried to make a new brand and they didn't know how to get rid of their waste, and so they just flushed it down the toilet and ended up backing up the sewers in everybody's house in a particular region of California, and they literally, the town rose up and said, get rid of these guys. And it was from that mistake that they were like, oh, we need to either take more precaution in what we do or move to a new location. There's always a story behind craft beer of like, well, we failed at this, but in the end, we found this great brand. And there's also this level of we aren't afraid to make fun of ourselves, I think, that comes with different brands. And you get these beers, and Lagunitas has a lot of them, like the 12th of Never. And you're like, what is that about? What an unusual name. And then you learn to find out that, like, well, they had made a pledge to never make canned beer. And then they got into a situation where they were like, well, that means people can't enjoy Lagunitas on a plane. Well, we want people to be able to enjoy Lagunitas on a plane, so we're going to have to produce some level of canned beer. And then they came out with this brand called the 12th of Never because they had pledged that they never would do it before. And I just love the idea of honestly recognizing that they have to grow as a company.
And do you think that some of that kind of self-aware humor that they have, and I think it's very evident in the marketing that they do, do you think some of that comes from the fact that they are kind of on that bubble where a lot of people don't even qualify them as craft beer anymore because they've gotten so big?
Yeah, I think it's like, it's kind of like when U2 went from Joshua Tree to that next album, which was just like, they were like, look, we don't know how to stay as a band and continue to grow without getting a little bit more poppy, without everybody starting to hate us. So let's just embrace it. And then Bono started wearing crazy big glasses. And I don't know if, you know, U2's a better band than they were back then by any means. But at some point in time, you have to be honest about where you are.
Yeah, I'm curious, do you think there's a comedy equivalent for the kind of craft beer scene versus, people who are just throwing back Olympia or Stag at the local rock club?
It's like British comedy, where you're like, oh, there's a subtle real charm to this versus, oh, I'm trying to think of just brutal blue collar, borderline, just like offensive comedy, which I feel like is the equivalent of when you're pulling out a Stag or an Olympia. Now, Stag or Olympia is kind of interesting because it's like, it's kind of refreshing from time to time, especially if you're overwhelmed by high level comedy. You know, that's when a fart comic, let's call it, can really steal the day, is when they come in surrounded by all this other high brow humor. But too much fart comic and you're tired of it real quick.
So I sometimes come back to the idea of, why are we even having this conversation? Because, you know, people want beer. Doesn't beer just sell itself, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that, well, that's the beauty of the craft beer stuff. You know, the only reason we really get into a problem is people like beer. They're going to buy beer. It's just that we're crowding each other, right? You know, you got to buy our beer because you're only going to drink so much in order to stay alive. So it's really about, how do we stand out from the other guy? And I think that's kind of what the marketing is about. I think that there's a charm in craft beer because it seems like each one of these beers is its own story of success that made it to that shelf, that made you buy it, versus a major corporation that sold you a 24-pack of the same beer because their Super Bowl commercial was funny.
Beer and content marketing are easy topics to like, so let's close our episode with our favorite exercise, I like, I wish. I like that craft beer brands have defined their story and learned how to tell it across channels. You look at Allagash's blog posts and you know they are all about local agriculture and the culture of their home state of Maine. You follow Chicago's own Goose Island on social accounts, and it's easy to see their emphasis on experimentation and the perfection of flavors. You peruse the Instagram history of Brooklyn Brewery's Garrett Oliver, and it's easy to see just why that brand would put such a beer philosopher out front. I do wish that more brewers and small businesses in the industry would heed Michael Kaiser's great advice and start with brand strategy first. Don't rush to tactics. You have to know your story and what makes you different before you try to tell it, no matter the channel. And really, that's good advice for any business. If you like what you heard today, stay tuned. On future episodes, we'll continue to tackle all things content marketing through the filter of creativity. Subscribe to It Takes Imagination today on iTunes and Google Play, and let us know what you think at podcast@imaginepub.com.